that's the way up to German.
Introduction.
Do you know what page on the introduction?
131.
Sorry?
131.
131.
Was it?
No,
X31 or something like that. Wasn't it?
Yeah, there are a lot of X's.
We did few paragraphs of last Thursday, yeah. We finish up to XX11, you know.
XXII.
XXII, that's yeah.
Okay, yeah. Which is in Roman numerals, of course, 22.
Yeah, 22, that's right.
For those of you who are not familiar. Okay, was I here last week?
You were sick last week. You were absent last week.
I was absent, okay. All right.
Manchester.
Yeah. Okay. So you read and discussed. Any questions from last week?
I think let's read this second paragraph and then we can go on question or something, you know.
Okay. Just I'm just trying to see where did you start last week, just to see where we got up to.
We started from XXI, you know. Second paragraph, you know. This one's a little short of cultivation, you know.
Okay. All right, that's good. So we discussed about cultivation activities, positive and negative action.
Yeah.
Those who are cultivating spiritual life and executing devotional service are always engaged in activity. Yes, not dull speculation. Thinking, feeling and willing. And our mental activities, you should always try to think of Krishna and try to plan how to please him. Following in the footsteps of great acharyas and the personal spiritual master. So engaging the words in the preaching the glories of the Lord is called kirtan. And thinking of Krishna's activities as he's speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, or engaging it in his various pastimes in Vrindavan with his devotees. In this way one can always think of the activities and pastimes of the Lord. This is the mental culture of Krishna consciousness. Very good, promising stuff. And similarly, we can offer many services with our bodily activities. But all such activities must be in relationship with Krishna. This relationship is established by connecting oneself with a bona fide spiritual master who is the direct representative of Krishna in disciplic succession. Therefore, the execution of Krishna conscious activities with the body should be directed by the spiritual master and then performed with faith. The connection with the spiritual master is called initiation. From the date of initiation by the spiritual master, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. Without initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is never performed. So some very interesting points. So there may be some questions or comments on this. And we'd welcome any such questions or comments.
Yeah, what's the difference between the first initiation and second initiation in Krishna consciousness?
Well, the first initiation is the Harinam initiation. This is the means by which one is actually getting the chanting of the holy name when one hears this from the spiritual master and takes initiation in that way, then one's chanting of Hare Krishna begins in earnest, in actual fact. And the second initiation is a further purifying process by which one begins one's development even more seriously of the brahminical qualities that he's already started to cultivate under the first initiation. So the brahminical qualities are, as Krishna describes them in the Bhagavad Gita, how did they go? You know the verse? Samo damo tapaso cham.
Shanti Rajan Evacha, Shanti Rajan Evacha.
Could you pass me one Bhagavad Gita, please? Yeah. Let's have a look at these. So the brahminical qualities. That's okay. This one's coming up. This is easier for me to read. But thank you. It's good that you bring it, Ravi. What verse is it?
I think it's 1842.
1842, yes. In the concluding chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining the different qualities by which the Brahmins work. And yes, absolutely spot on. Samodamo tapasocham kshanti arjivam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahmakarma svabhavajam. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmanas work. So as we develop our Krishna consciousness and as we develop these Brahminical qualities, this actually accelerates our devotional progress. And particularly, there are two qualities which are very important. One, of course, actually all of them are very important, but particularly truthfulness and cleanliness are extremely important qualities of a Brahmin. So as one develops his Krishna consciousness, one is expected to naturally become more and more truthful and clean. And also we see here jnana vijnana. Jnana means knowledge and vijnana means wisdom, applied knowledge, how to apply that knowledge. So as we develop our understanding of Krishna consciousness, we develop an understanding more and more how to apply Krishna consciousness in our daily lives. This wisdom starts to develop more and more. If one has not already developed in those qualities, then this is further opportunity for development. And amongst Brahmins, the most important quality of or qualification of any Brahmin, Brahmin means one who knows what is Brahman. So one is supposed to be somewhat cultivated of one's not spiritual knowledge. And particularly the activity, the knowledge should be of Brahman, and the vijnana, and the wisdom means the activities are engaged more and more in Brahman, in Krishna, actually, spiritual activities. And the most important function of a Brahmin, Krishna explains, that they are supposed to teach and particularly make other Brahmins, bring others to the level of Brahmins. Actually, this is very important. Not that I should be satisfied to be Brahminically initiated myself, but how to help others also develop the qualification of being a Brahmin. This is very significant. So this must be done. This means how to elevate people to the platform of the mode of goodness. Because a Brahmin is supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness, in his body, mind, words, activities, everything supposed to come to the mode of goodness. In Bhagavad Gita here we see that there are qualities and activities are described for the different modes of nature, but the Brahmana, he's supposed to come to the mode of goodness. Because from the mode of goodness, our Krishna consciousness naturally starts to develop more and more. So we have to learn to understand what is the difference between activities in the mode of ignorance, activities in the mode of passion, activities in the mode of goodness. Not just activities, but everything regarding these three modes. This is discussed here in Bhagavad Gita. The idea being that from the mode of goodness, then one can develop to more easily to the mode of pure goodness. It's just like this example we've given before, that you've got a piece of wood, yeah, and there's fire inside the wood. And you know that if you act in a certain way, you can get the fire to come out of the wood. If you put a match to it, the fire will come out of the wood, yes. Everybody has this experience somewhere along the line. As children, we probably played with fire and got our wrists slapped for it. But anyway, the principle is that if wood is dry, it's easy to get the fire out of the wood. If wood is damp, it's quite difficult. You get a lot of smoke, but not so much fire. And if the wood is wet, you're not going to get the fire out of the wood very easily at all. So, situated in the mode of ignorance, in our thoughts and our activities and our faith, our understanding, our activities, our religious activities, if these are in the mode of ignorance, then practically to develop pure love of Krishna, that pure stage of purified goodness, is very difficult. So from the mode of ignorance, just like there are 18 Puranas, 6 are aimed at bringing people out from the mode of ignorance. 6 are aimed for getting people out from the mode of passion. And 6 are aimed for getting people out of the mode of goodness. So the whole program is gradual elevation, drying out the wood, drying out the activities so that we become, instead of being saturated with material ignorance, rather we become purified of the material qualities. So from ignorance we have to develop through the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. And from the mode of goodness we can actually easily become liberated and engaged in the loving service of Krishna. So therefore the principle is to accelerate that drying out process of being saturated with material qualities and start to develop our spiritual qualities more and more. So the Brahminical initiation is a further step to accelerate our devotional progress. Is that okay? Okay. Any other questions or thoughts arising or comments? Please feel free to ask. It's okay. We don't bite very often. I'm trying to kick the habit. So if you look in this chapter, the perfection of renunciation, Krishna's already summarized from the previous chapter the divisions of faith, which describe the different qualities of people's faith in chapter 17. And in chapter 16, we see there's the divine and demoniac natures, where Krishna's describing how the different influence of material nature works. Chapter 14 is actually starting to discuss the three modes of material nature. So there are a number of chapters. The tail end of the Bhagavad Gita is describing more and more what is our situation in this material world, so that we can get a clearer perspective on what's actually going on in this material world. How the material world is being run, because Krishna says that everything is being run in this material world according to the dictations of my inferior material nature. So to get to see how it's working, Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to give us some insight so we can understand what's actually going on. So it's very important to understand Bhagavad Gita very carefully, which is why we're step by step trying to go through it and get the hang of what Krishna is saying. So in this chapter, just to take this point, Krishna clarifies it in chapter text 40. He's in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita. There is no being existing either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems which is freed from these three modes born of material nature. So material nature is working in these three modes. So this is how to understand how the material nature is working. The mode of passion is the creative mode. The mode of goodness is the mode of maintenance, actually. And the mode of ignorance is the destructive mode. So from the destructive mode, we have to come up to the creative mode and actually to the purified state of being able to maintain and develop. And Krishna describes so many things in Bhagavad Gita, but particularly he describes everything about the three modes in a few chapters, just to help us understand how the world is working and how we're caught up in it, so we can see what's going on. Because it's just like if you want to do business, sometimes people see people who are making lots of money doing big business and think, oh, I'd like some of that. Yeah. But they have no idea how to do it. have no idea how to do it. It requires some understanding about how to manipulate things so that the money comes into your pocket. Yes, there is a science. Or you may see a doctor. He's able to cure people in so many different ways and work with different medicines and potions and whatever. Or you may see a scientist. He's able to utilize different techniques to manipulate the material nature in a different way. An electrician can utilize electricity to make the TV and the everything work, the mobile phone. Nowadays the watches are all electric practically, everything. How to make it all work. How to make the lights work. But in all these instances, there is a technology of how it's actually working. And once you understand the technology, then you can make it work. It consists of certain techniques to make the technology work. So spiritual science is also a technology, but it's a spiritual technology, and there are spiritual techniques by which one can develop one's spiritual life and become conscious of Krishna. The techniques we're reading in the Nectar of Devotion, they begin with hearing and chanting, and as we'll see, so many activities which are going to be described step by step through these classes on Nectar of Devotion. So that should help, I hope. Okay, is it all right? In other words, to take some of the mystery and the guesswork out of what we're doing, there are techniques. You apply these techniques, the scientific process, you apply these techniques and you make progress. Just like the child, if he sees Einstein's equation on the notice board, you know, E equals mc squared, what does that mean? You know, nobody knows what it means. But once you understand something, you go through the learning process, the techniques of learning how the mathematics and algebra and so many different complex functions of the material world work, then you start to be able to make sense of it and utilize those principles, actually. Put them to good use. So shall we read? Okay, let's start off. Bhupendra Prabhu, could you start off reading halfway down page XXII from the introduction, please, the cultivation?
But this cultivation of Krishna consciousness is not material. The Lord has three general energies, namely the external energy, the internal energy, and the marginal energy. The living entities are called marginal energies, and the material cosmic manifestation is the action of the external or the marginal energy.
Material energy.
Material energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the spiritual world, which is the manifestation of the internal energy. The living entities who are called marginal energies perform material activities. When acting under the inferior
external
energy, and when they engage in activities under the internal spiritual energy, these activities are called Krishna consciousness. This means that those who are great souls or great devotees do not act under the spell of the material energy, but act instead under the protection of the spiritual energy. Any activity done in devotional service or in Krishna consciousness are directly under the control of the spiritual energy. And in other words, energy is a sort of strength, and this strength can be spiritualized by the mercy of both the bona fide spiritual master and Krishna.
A lot of very nice points there. Okay, questions, comments. Bhupendra ji.
I think a lot of people, when we see we're doing our activities, they just think that it's just like on a material level.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that what activities we do are, these are spiritual. That's why sometimes to people, when you tell them about spiritual things, they just think, oh, it's just, you know, they don't get convinced that it's a spiritual thing.
It's another variety of the material world. Yeah. Why they will think like that, yes. Because they've got no experience and no knowledge of anything beyond this material world. And even their knowledge of the material world is very paltry. It's very, very poor fund of knowledge of what the, what's actually going on in the material world.
Like Mr. Frog of the Well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he gives the example of Dr. Frog. He puffs himself up to try to understand. You explained the story last week.
You are doing nicely, Prabhu. You say, Prabhu.
Well, you see, the principle is that the frog mentality is that he can't understand what's going on outside his own little well. And so Prabhupada would tell that story of Dr. Frog. He's in his little well, and another frog drops in and says to him, hey, this is a nice little well, but you know what I've seen outside is a big ocean. And this other frog, he says, what do you mean ocean? And he says, well, it's a huge, huge place, so much water. Fantastic big place, so much water. And this one frog was very proud of his little well that he lives in. He's thinking, well, you know, what do you mean very big? You know, he says, it's huge, it's enormous. So this frog, he starts puffing himself. I said, well, he says, is it this big? You know, he's gauging anything only by his own limited experience. And the other frog says, no, it's huge, it's enormous, it's thousands of times bigger than this well. Yeah, it's an unlimited ocean, can't you understand? And so the frog, he's saying, what do you mean so big? Is it this big? You know, you see frogs, they sometimes puff themselves up like that. And the other frog saying, no, no, it's huge, this is nothing, this is so insignificant in comparison with how big that well is. So this other frog is becoming quite concerned, he's going, well, is it this big? And he nicely explodes. How can he possibly understand? How can he possibly understand? I was just talking with my son today, just to get an idea. We were admiring the beautiful trees and countryside driving back through Nottingham today, coming back, and such a beautiful scenery. And we were just discussing, how is it that this world is going on in such a beautiful way? This is just the action of Krishna's inferior material energy, but it's so splendid. Krishna's saying, who can understand me? When with but a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support these entire universes. And he's also explaining with a single spark of my splendor, all beautiful, glorious and mighty creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. This is Krishna. He's making all these wonderful things. And we're trying to imitate. You know, in so many ways, trying to make so many wonderful things. We try to make a jumbo jet, but it can't go and find its own fuel. It can't reproduce itself. It can't be in any way self-repairing. But a little insect, the technology is far greater in an insect than in a jumbo jet. And there are billions and billions of insects, so tiny that we can't even see them, and they fly and zoom around so many places, and you know, there are millions of them, unlimited. This is just one tiny little species of life. So what is Krishna's potency for creating all these universes? It's so extraordinary. And yet the scientists and the material philosophers, they dare to declare, they give themselves great credit for their intelligence to manufacture some so-called wonderful thing. But when it comes down to God, they say, no, there is no God. There is no intelligent being. Everything happened by chance. Yeah. My son was telling me he lives next to Morrison's supermarket, not very far away. And whenever he goes there, he sees that the gardens are all, you know, they have plants and things outside. They're all very nicely maintained. They always look first class. But yet he never happens to see anyone coming to actually maintain them. So if he was a fool, he could think that yes, it just happens automatically by itself, by chance, that somebody comes and maintains all these flowers and flower beds in such a nice way. But because he has some brain, he can understand, well, I haven't seen it, but there must be someone behind it. There must be some intelligent person coming and making such a nice arrangement. So how we can think that behind this arrangement of the whole cosmic manifestation, where the sun doesn't deviate from its orbit by even 1/1000th of a second, and it doesn't deviate even an inch from its orbit, how perfect this arrangement is that's going on, and how there can be no one behind it, that it's just happening by chance. It just doesn't add up. So Krishna is explaining his energies, and in Bhagavad Gita this is nicely explained, and here we're seeing not from the frog's perspective, who's trying to puff himself up and make him and try and understand by his own speculative brain power how big is Krishna's creation or how it's working. Still, even we were discussing also this one body, the human body. You go inside a hospital, it's so easy to get lost inside these big hospitals, because there are so many departments, all just trying to understand how the human body is working. So many big brains, and so many departments, and specialists within that department, and a specialist of the specialist, and just trying to understand some little aspect of Krishna's intelligence, how he's put together this wonderful machinery. Just trying to get to grips with some tiny little aspect of how brilliantly working this machinery is, and how to fix it if it seems to not work according to the way we want it to work. So Krishna's intelligence is so superior, but to understand how it's working with our teeny brains, and to dare to suggest that there is no God, is simply the height of foolishness. And actually, this is not the process. Even the doctors, even the lawyers, even the scientists, they cannot learn everything by their deductive process. They have to learn so much by hearing from authorities. You find a doctor in the hospital, we have many doctors in our Hare Krishna movement, and they've been studying for 10-15 years just to develop their skills so they can practice medicine to some degree. So they have to learn from so many people. So spiritual science is no difference. We also have to learn and keep learning. So we learn from Krishna's devotee, who learns from Krishna. This is the disciplic succession. We take initiation from the spiritual master. We learn from Krishna's devotee how Krishna's scientific creation is working. And the first principle that's being discussed here is that Krishna has three general energies. This we can't understand by our speculative approach, no matter how fertile our brains are. But if we understand that the material nature, which Krishna is saying, what are the eight elements? You know, what are these eight elements Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita?
Fire.
Hmm?
Fire, air, sky, earth, water, mind, intelligence, and force.
Very good, yes. These are there in Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Bhumi, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Krishna says these eight together comprise my separated material, inferior energies. This is simply a display of a tiny portion of Krishna's inferior material energy. But besides this inferior energy, there is the Jiva Bhuta, the living entity, the spiritual spark within each body, which makes the body come to life. Because without the spiritual spark, the body doesn't move. You get a child, and he's born, stillborn, they call it. There's no soul inside. The body doesn't grow, it doesn't develop. Yet. Only when there's a soul inside does the body actually come to life. So this is Krishna's marginal energy. He's superior, but the superior energy, which creates and displays the manifestation of the spiritual world. This is Krishna's superior energy. But we're called marginal because we can either be happily situated in the spiritual energy, or we can be situated, covered by the material energy. Just like a beach. You know, this sort of weather, people like to think of going and lying on the beach and swimming in the water. So the beach is the margin between the sea and the land. Sometimes the margin is covered by the ocean, and sometimes it's uncovered, it's exposed to the air. Like that. So we can become covered because we're very tiny. Can anyone, once they get caught up in the ocean, if the ocean decides now you're going to be swept away, what can you do about it? How you can swim across an ocean? Is it possible?
No.
So we may be superior living entities, but once we're swept away in the ocean of material existence, we're very tiny, we're very insignificant. And although even here, still there's the spiritual consciousness, the spiritual qualities, still there's some life within the material body, but we're always caught up in these ideas that I'm this body, and working in such a way like I'm the body and like there's no tomorrow. I've got to work just to maintain the body, and that's the end of life. That's the be-all and the end-all of life. You go out, you know, like Arthur Automatic in the factory, pick up the box and put it over here and do all these activities that we do in the material world just to keep the body and soul together. And this is mundane existence. But transcendental existence means to know that I'm different from the body. I'm Krishna's marginal energy. But I'm Krishna's energy. And I'm meant, just like the material energy is busy serving Krishna, is following Krishna's laws, doing everything that Krishna wants to do. The spiritual energy is also following Krishna's laws, serving Krishna, satisfying Him very nicely. And the marginal energy, the jivas, we're also meant to serve Krishna very nicely. We have no other business. But out of ignorance, we become swept away by the material energy. So our business is to get transcendental knowledge, knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, knowledge of the science of serving Krishna, which we get by the mercy of the Guru and Krishna, so that we can engage in loving service to Krishna. So it is said, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru. And by the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna. Unless one gets a guru, a spiritual master, how will he approach Krishna? What is our qualification to approach Krishna? But the spiritual master, he gives us the chance to serve Krishna. He gives us the introduction, the connection to Krishna. And this is what happens at the time of initiation. As it's explained here by Rupa Goswami, Srila Prabhupada explains in this previous paragraph, from the date of initiation by the spiritual master, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. Without initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is never performed. So we have to become eager to initiate our spiritual life, to be initiated, to begin our spiritual life in earnest. And that's what these books are for, to help us develop that eagerness to want to practice our spiritual life. And when we're practicing our spiritual life, to help us understand how to practice it properly. And to fully enable us to keep that connection with Krishna. So these books are valuable in the beginning, when we're coming to Krishna consciousness. When we start our Krishna consciousness in earnest, these books are incredibly valuable. When we're practicing Krishna consciousness, these books are incredibly important. And when we're perfecting Krishna consciousness, these books are the topmost solace for one who is actually experiencing love of Krishna and missing Krishna. By making connection with these literatures, one keeps oneself in loving connection with Krishna. So these books are incredibly valuable because they're the instructions of the spiritual master. so therefore they help us approach Krishna. So this is why we try to put careful, serious energy into understanding everything that we're reading, so that we can see how to develop in the science of Krishna. Any questions or comments? Okay. Okay.
And I put some shadow on the side here where the plates are.
Okay.
So she poured the custard on the cake up.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Very good.
Okay,
yeah,
Ashok.
I've got a question. So if the connection between the devotee and Krishna is established only at the time of initiation, then what about those who are not initiated but still trying to serve Krishna in some ways? How does Krishna accept this service from non-initiated devotees?
Krishna is not obliged to accept. He's not obliged because he says that actually patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prachati. So we have to learn the science of loving Krishna. So he's not obliged to accept, but still, when he sees we're sincerely trying to approach him, he helps bring us closer to him. That's the fact. He brings us closer and closer so that we actually develop that strong desire and determination. Yes, I must render loving service to Krishna. I'm Krishna's servant. When we start to understand ourselves, I'm Krishna's eternal servant, then naturally we'll be very eager to progress in our spiritual life and try to find a spiritual master who can take us back home, back to Godhead. So in the meantime, we are practicing still under the guidance of the spiritual master. So Krishna is accepting because under Srila Prabhupada's shelter, we're engaging in this devotional service. We're learning the science of how to hear from the spiritual master. So under this shelter, we're making progress towards, it's just like an example that I tend to think of it, is just if you're going to climb Mount Everest, are you just going to walk up to Mount Everest and start climbing? Or are you going to have to prepare yourself, first of all, for the ascent, for when you actually begin the ascent? And to prepare yourself, you have to learn something of the science of how to do that climb. You have to get yourself fully equipped, and you have to learn how to use the equipment. You have to do some practice so that you know how to do it, so you can understand what sort of things you're going to face. You have to develop some team work with the people, because you're not going to do it on your own. You're going to need a whole team of people to help you do it. And then when you're actually ready to do that, when the moment is right, then at some point you'll begin your ascent of Mount Everest. Yes. Not that you just walk up and say, okay, well now I'm initiated, I'm already halfway up to the top. Yeah, I'm KC, I'll be there in a few days. Yeah. It doesn't work like that. We actually have to prepare ourselves physically, psychologically. We have to get trained up so to practice spiritual life, so that when the opportunity presents itself, that we can actually practice spiritual life very seriously. So our progress is being made. We're preparing for the initiation, but the initiation is the beginning of the climb, in earnest. Yes, it's not that because I'm initiated now, I'm 95% there, I'll be a pure devotee in a few days. Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, so if, like, is there a time limit in which one should, be fully prepared for initiation?
How much time have you got in this human form of life?
Not much.
There you go. Mm. So, not much time to get serious and to try to take seriously our real business in spiritual life. Because none of us know how much time we've got. Do we have 24 hours? Do we have 24 minutes? Do we have 24 seconds? So it's a serious business, and if we actually get serious about our spiritual life, then we can understand, yes, I have to try my best to practice Krishna consciousness. But any progress we make is not lost. But Prabhupada, he encouraged us very hard to get serious about our spiritual life so that we can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Yeah. Yes, certainly if you lose the opportunity, whatever you've done will not be wasted and you can continue from your next life. But how many more births and deaths do you want to make? You know, do you want to just... If you're climbing up the Empire State Building, you know, you can take it at a nice leisurely stroll, or we'll do a few stairs today, and you know, we'll do just take the elevator and finish it. That's the thing. Finish our business in this life. Because if we actually understand what this material world is and what sort of predicament we're in and how dangerous the situation we're in, then we can be a little bit serious about it. So therefore we have to hear to understand what the situation is. That I don't know when I'm going to die. I don't know how to make progress in spiritual life. But the devotees, they're learning how to make progress. So let me associate with them. Let me learn from Krishna's devotees how to understand Krishna, how to think of Krishna. Just like we read in the top of this beginning paragraph, from the first end of the previous page here, XXI, bottom line. There are activities of the body, activities of the mind, and activities of speech. A Krishna conscious person engages his words in preaching the glories of the Lord. This is called kirtan. And by his mind, a Krishna conscious person always thinks of the activities of the Lord. As he's speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, or engaging in his various pastimes in Vrindavan with his devotees. In this way, one can always think of the activities and pastimes of the Lord. This is the mental culture of Krishna consciousness. So we have to practice this culture. Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, Manmana, engage your mind in always thinking of me. This is the culture, the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So this we should do, nothing to wait. We can read and hear about Krishna's activities, Krishna's words, what Krishna's explaining in Bhagavad Gita, the science of loving Krishna, like this book here, Nectar of Devotion. And in this way, remember Krishna and explain to others about Krishna. This is called preaching. This way, we follow Krishna's instructions. And as we take these steps closer to Krishna, Krishna takes much, much bigger steps, 10 times as many steps closer to us. That's the fact. Krishna's made it very clear in Bhagavad Gita that we should try to develop our love for him, learn how to surrender to him, and basically do four things. Always think of him, become his devotee, worship him, and offer our obeisances to him. And this way Krishna says, certainly you will come to me and become very dear to me. And Krishna explains in the end of Bhagavad Gita how to become most dear, how to really accelerate that process of becoming dear to him. And that is by explaining the science of Krishna to others. That's how we actually accelerate our devotional service very fast. So if you're going to... Just like sometimes we're waiting at the lights and someone's thinking about changing gear when the lights have already turned green and you see it happening, and then by the time they're actually ready to move off, the lights have changed and they've gone red again. So you know, sometimes you see that experience. So the principle is, how slowly are we going to dawdle along in the material world? Or, you know, when the time comes, when the opportunity comes, are we going to step on the gas and get serious and make progress? Yeah? But we have to see the position. We have to see the opportunity, and we have to see what is the position so that we can advance nicely. So sometimes Prabhupada used this expression, just see the position. I've been doing a lot of gardening the last few weeks. And you see so many living entities. It's such a learning experience just being in a garden, trying to do some gardening. You see these weeds which get everywhere and try to choke, you know, all the nice plants, the ivy and the tangleweed or whatever it is, and so many other weeds that just come and try and grab everything. They grow so fast, actually. A little water comes, the plants grow nicely, but the weeds, they just grow like anything. And you see all these varieties of living entities in so many different species of life, so many insects and worms and birds and plants and so many things. And then you start to understand, well, wait a minute, these are all living entities. These are all jiva souls who've taken birth. And I'm just one or two people in this garden, and there are millions of creatures here. Millions and millions and millions of creatures just in one little garden. And there's just one human being in the garden. How rare is that human form of life? How much have I had to go through till I got to the human form of life? How many births and deaths have I had to go through until I've got now this human form of life? It's such a rare chance. And out of all the human species, human beings on the planet, how many of them are actually at all interested in becoming Krishna conscious? And out of all those who are actually interested a little bit in becoming Krishna consciousness, how much are actually serious and making their lives perfect to actually practice Krishna consciousness 24/7 of achieved perfection? So Krishna is explaining this also in Bhagavad Gita. Manushyanam sahasreshu. Yeah. Out of many, many millions of one among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And out of all those endeavoring, out of those who have achieved perfection, Krishna says hardly one knows me in truth. But Prabhupada is trying to give us what Krishna is offering us. He's coming in disciplic succession to try to give us what Krishna is offering us, and that is the chance to know him, to meet him, to love him, to be with him face to face, eye to eye, as we are seeing each other now. Krishna is giving us that opportunity. And so this is something extraordinary. This is the position we're in now. And this is the offering of the situation we have to take advantage, if we can just clear some of the weeds and clogged up rubbish, jungle of brain foolishness that's in our brain, our dull brains, and get them clear and straighten them out, and get actually a little sane. Another thing I was discussing with my son today, we were discussing about different kinds of mentality in the material world. And one of the items that comes up as a topic is sanity. So what is the definition of sanity or insanity?
It's the person who can understand the thing in the right perspective.
Yes. So how can we understand someone who is insane? What is the diagnosis of someone who is insane? It's very simple, actually.
Someone who's crazy.
Yeah, crazy means
he does things which he's not supposed to do.
It's called a consideration for anybody or himself, or he's an insane person.
He does things
by nothing. He has his own.
Okay.
Someone who's on another planet.
Well, there are living entities on all kinds of planets. But how do we actually make a simple definition of someone who's insane? Prabhupada gave that definition really simply. He said a crazy person continues to do those things which make him suffer. Actually, this is a definition. An insane person continues to do those things which make him suffer.
most of the time people say it's because somebody's had a lot of bad things going on in their life. Other people will say it's because they've had a lot of suffering. Majority of the time people who have gone insane and doing that to themselves, they're not doing it because of the way their life's been, they're doing it because they feel they should. It could just be one little thing that's gone wrong in their life or that's happened, and they feel they should be punished, and it's their own way of punishing themselves.
People have no idea what is causing the suffering, but when we become intelligent, when we can actually understand how this world is working, and we can see, wait a minute, if I engage in these activities, then I suffer. And if I engage in these activities, then I become happy. It's what they call in some circles a no-brainer. But the principle is that we have very dull brains to understand what's actually going on in this material world. Therefore, Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita. The devotee comes to try to teach us and encourage us. Look, have a look and see what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. This is why we're suffering in the material world. This is how we're suffering. This is how we perpetuate our suffering. We keep creating and generating karma, which causes us to suffer repeated birth and death. And this is how you engage in activities with transcendental knowledge that burn up that karma and engage you in your real life, which is loving service to Krishna. So this science is all beautifully, clearly described in Bhagavad Gita. But yet, I've got so many other things to do, I'm busy here in the material world. I haven't got time to read Bhagavad Gita. I'm too busy suffering. I'm too busy trying to make the solution to my material problems, which have no end. Yeah. So actually we have to clear the stool out of our brains. This is the principle. We have to wash our brains. So this is the purifying process, to wash all the stool out of our brains and get clear, get a clear perspective, get a clear handle on what's going on. And when we can understand gradually what's going on, get serious about doing something about it. It's not sufficient to have armchair knowledge. Armchair knowledge is very nice, but then what are you going to do about it? Yeah, well, theoretically, if I were to get out of my chair and try to put the fire out that's starting to burn in the corner of my room, theoretically, I could stop suffering and not be burned to death. Theoretically, that would be quite possible, wouldn't it? But then are you going to do it? Are you going to leap out of your armchair? At least put the fire out. Or if you can't put the fire out, then get out before you get burned to shreds. Yes. So we have to have some knowledge and some wisdom. So this is becoming Brahmin. Yes. Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so this is very nice. In this chapter, we're seeing in this introduction, this paragraph that we just read, that the living entities who are called marginal energy perform material activities when acting under the inferior external energy. So when we're acting under the external energy, we're bewildered into thinking, I'm part of this material world. And therefore, I'm separate from Krishna. I'm actually this body, because I've forgotten Krishna. This means acting under the external energy, under the influence of the inferior energy. And it means, therefore, my activities in life are aimed at satisfying under ignorance my mind and body and senses. That means acting under the influence of the material energy. But acting under the influence of the spiritual energy means that I know I'm part of Krishna. So let me be engaged eternally in Krishna's service. Let me be engaged now in Krishna's service. And no longer under being victimized by the material energy, by Maya. So that kind of activity is under the protection of the spiritual energy. Krishna confirms this in Bhagavad Gita. Mahatmanastu man parta daivim prakritim ashrita. The great souls, those who are actually engaged in devotional service, they're under the protection of the divine nature. So their activities, Bhupendra Prabhu was explaining how our activities may be seen as being just like anybody else's. Yes, we're getting up in the morning. Yes, we're brushing our teeth. Yes, we're eating food. But when we wake up in the morning, we think of Krishna. We chant Krishna's names. We offer obeisances to the spiritual master. We cleanse our body because it's Krishna's temple. We offer the food to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. And we take the remnants of Krishna's food. We hear about Krishna. We try to act in our duties, in our service to try to please Krishna. We try to tell others about Krishna. We try to hear and understand about Krishna. We chant Krishna's name, meditating on the sound of Krishna's name, because this connects us to Krishna. This purifies our minds. And this prayer, this Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is petitioning Krishna, my dear Krishna, please engage me in your loving service. So our consciousness is changed. Just by our consciousness, we become connected to Krishna. Whereas if we're unconscious, we're disconnected from Krishna. So this is the difference between being under the shelter of the spiritual energy and being under the shelter of the material energy. Because the real thing comes down to these two regulative principles. Which are? Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Thank you. Yes, very simple. Everything else we do is to help us practice these two regulative principles. It's really straightforward. It's such a nice science. So Krishna saying means... this means that those who are great souls or great devotees do not act under the spell of material energy. Everyone in the material world is acting under the spell of material energy. Forced to think, yeah, I'm a rabbit, I'm a frog, I'm an insect, I'm a tree, I'm a human being. I'm meant to satisfy my senses in every species of life. That's actually the spell of material energy. We discussed that spell before, like the magician. He hypnotizes you. He puts you under his spell. And he says, now you're a rabbit. You jump around on the floor. Now I'm a rabbit. You see what happens? You ever seen this happen? Someone becomes hypnotized? You might have seen it on the TV or on a stage. And you see that under the spell of the magician, he's hypnotized. He thinks, this is what I am. You know, now I'm falling asleep. Okay. He's under the spell of the magician. And we're under the spell of the material energy, thinking I'm this body. Thinking I'm me, this is me. Instead of knowing that I'm Krishna, I'm a little tiny particle of Krishna, different from the body. I don't belong in this material body. I belong with Krishna. I'm meant to be serving Krishna, but under Maya's spell, I've now become forgetful of who I am. I've forgotten how to serve Krishna. I've forgotten how to love Krishna.
How do we know the magician is real? I mean, most magicians can be say they're real, but they're fake, as well Krishna's not.
Whether everything in this material world is real because it's part of Krishna's manifestation, but Krishna is the one behind this material manifestation. So what we're concerned with is understanding the reality of Krishna and understanding the reality of the soul. These five subjects in Bhagavad Gita. Someone may be more or less expert, someone just like Paul Daniels, he may be a pretty good magician, or he may have his bits where he slips up. They only show you the bits on telly where his tricks work out. Right? So, but the fact is that the real magician is Krishna, because his tricks never fail. Krishna is described, we're describing in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is addressing Krishna as a tutor, O infallible one, one who cannot fail, who cannot fall down, please drive my chariot. Because the devotee knows that actually there are two classes of beings, those who are fallible and those who are infallible. Everyone in the material world is fallible, but those who are actually fully on the spiritual platform, they're infallible. They can't fail, they can't fall. Like that. Is that okay?
That's good. Okay.
So we can know, we study the science, we know the qualification. Four kinds of failings of every conditioned soul. One, I must make mistakes. Two, I must be under some kind of illusion. Three, means I've got this cheating propensity. And four,
illusion.
Yeah, I must be under illusion, I must make mistakes. And at four, I've got imperfect senses. I can't perceive clearly what's actually going on with my imperfect senses. I can't perceive how it is these planets are floating in space. I can't perceive how it's what's even going on inside my own body. I take some food and it goes into my body and then somehow it comes out the other end sooner or later, hopefully. If it doesn't, you've got a problem. But you don't know what's actually going on inside your own body. Yeah. We don't know what's going on around the corner. Our senses are so imperfect. We have to have these watches because we don't even know what time it is. Everything. So these are the symptoms of an imperfect person. But a perfect person, he knows Krishna. He's properly connected to Krishna. So we study this nectar of devotion, this science of the complete science of bhakti yoga, and we become perfect, and gradually that perfection increases more and more and more. Material world means either it's perfect or it's not perfect. Actually means nothing is perfect. Because what machine has anyone made? What has anyone done that is perfect? Even one beautiful work of art, it starts rotting. It deteriorates.